time and place that has been noticed for a hearing in docket number 140-3531. In matter of the application of Rocky Mountain Power to increase the deferred EVA rate through energy balancing account mechanism. I'm Commissioner Clark. I'll serve as the hearing officer for our proceeding today. To my left is Chairman Ron Allen. To his left is Commissioner Thad LaVar. I'd like to begin by the counsel for the parties, beginning with the applicant entering their appearances.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Yvonne Hogle, and I'm here on behalf of Rocky Mountain Power. With me here today in support of the settlement stipulation is Mr. Hawkins. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Patricia E. Schmidt with the Attorney General's Office, representing the Division of Public Utilities. With me as the Division's witness is Matthew Croft.
Rex Olson with the Attorney General's Office, representing the Office of Consumer Services, and Gimble.
Thank you. Any other appearances? And is there anyone on the phone who intends to be a participant in the proceeding today? Do we have people on the phone?
We do. I can hear them.
Dana Rolfe from the Pacific Court on the phone if needed.
Thank you. Okay, we've got a microphone now so we can hear you. Thank you.
This is Jack Stock from Pacific Court.
Thank you. And if you're just monitoring, there's no need to identify yourselves. But if you're going to participate, we'd like to know that in advance. Are there any preliminary matters before I lay out how we intend to proceed today?
Yes, Your Honor. The company is going to present James Zhang, who I believe just spoke. Who will be adopting the testimony, all of the testimony and exhibits that were filed by Joel Stewart today. And he will be available to answer any questions that the commission may have regarding that testimony, in addition to the exhibit A, which was attached to the stipulation. In addition, I believe we have all of the other witnesses on the phone who also filed testimony here today, available to answer any questions. And behind me is Mr. Steve McGoogle, who I believe also filed direct testimony in the case, who is available to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much.
And then I wonder if we can move for the admission of all of the testimony filed in this case into the record as evidence. If right now is the appropriate time.
We can do it now, and that would, I assume your motion encompasses the testimony of the other parties as well.
Yes, Your Honor.
So is there any objection to receiving all of the pre-filed testimony into evidence?
We have no objection, Your Honor.
That we receive.
In one more matter,
Your Honor,
I received a phone call from Mr. Gary Dodge, representing UAE, extending his apologies for not being able to be here this morning. Wanted me to represent to you that he and his client support the settlement stipulation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other preliminary matters? As Ms. Hogle has mentioned, we received a filing in the docket on October the 6th, 2 days ago, the filing of a settlement stipulation signed by the applicant, the Division of Public Utilities, the Office of Consumer Services, and UAE Intervention Group. And it's our intent to address that settlement stipulation in this hearing. And I presume, since no other parties entered in the appearance at this stage, that no one has come with an intention to do anything other than that today. But if I'm incorrect, now's the time. Someone to speak up. And what we propose to do, I believe that Rocky Mountain Power, the division, and the office each have a witness who will support the settlement stipulation, we would propose to swear them together and have them testify as a panel, each one in turn making any statement of orally that they wish to about the settlement stipulation, and then we'll have an opportunity for questions from parties or the commission after they have each made their summary or statement. Any objections to that process?
No objection.
No objection.
No objection.
And since we have already received the written testimony, I propose that each of the witnesses be sworn now and begin the process I described. So would you each raise your right hand, please? If you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. So we'll begin with the company, Ms. Hogan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Clemens. Can you please state and spell your name and your position with the company for the record?
Yes, my name is Paul H. Clements, C-L-E-M-E-N-T-S. I'm employed by Rocky Mountain Power as Director of Regulatory Affairs. My business address is 201 South Main Street, Suite 2300, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84111.
And what is the purpose of your testimony here today?
Today I will briefly review the history of events and key elements of the stipulation entered into by the four signing parties. Those parties are Rocky Mountain Power, the Utah Division of Public Utilities, the Utah Office of Consumer Services, and the Utah Association of Energy Users. I will also reconfirm Rocky Mountain Power's support of the stipulation and the company's belief that the stipulation is in the public interest.
Please proceed.
I'll begin by recounting the relevant key events that led to the agreement presented here today. First, on March 17, 2014, Rocky Mountain Power filed an application to increase rates by $28.3 million through the Energy Balancing Account, or EBA. On April 1, 2014, the Commission convened a scheduling conference and established a schedule through an order and notice of hearing dated that same day. On July 29, 2014, the division filed its audit report and direct testimony. And on August 28, 2014, the interveners filed direct testimony and the company provided its response to the division's audit report. The docket proceeded on September 23, 2014, with all parties filing their rebuttal testimony. And then on October 6, 2014, the parties reached agreement and executed the settlement stipulation before the commission for approval today. In addition to the 20 filing requirement responses included with the company's application, the company responded to 211 data requests. If you include the subparts of those data requests, the company responded to 415 data requests. In response to those requests, the company provided more than 2,400 documents to parties who participated in this case as they prepared their audit and their responses to the company's case. So as you can see, prior to engaging in settlement discussions, a substantial amount of evidence and discovery had been reviewed, analyzed, and evaluated by the parties. Over the last few weeks, the parties have been engaged in settlement discussions. Based upon those discussions, the parties have agreed to the terms and conditions set forth in the settlement stipulation before the commission. The stipulation addresses a number of issues. The individual parties may have placed greater weight on some issues than others in getting comfortable with the stipulation. I'll let each individual party address those issues if they choose. The signed stipulation was filed with the commission on October 6, 2014, and all intervening parties in the case have signed the stipulation.
Okay, can you please describe the terms, the key terms of the stipulation?
Yes, I assume the commission and other interested parties have read the stipulation, so I will briefly address the key components without reading the stipulation verbatim. In doing so, I do not intend to modify the terms of the stipulation, so if I misspeak, the language of the stipulation and not my words is the binding agreement. The stipulation includes agreement on the financial or rate request component of the docket, as well as introduction of several non-financial terms that are related to processes and procedures for future EBA cases. Starting with the financial component, the parties agree to the following, and this is found in paragraph 3 of the stipulation. The parties agree that the commission should allow Rocky Mountain Power to recover EBA costs in this docket in the amount of $25.3 million of the approximate amount of $28.3 million that the company requested. And this is based on an unspecified adjustment in the amount of $3.0 million. The stipulation also includes several non-financial terms. These terms will put in place various processes and procedures that will facilitate the division's review and audit in future EBA dockets. They will also improve the information exchange between the company and the division. And if I may speak to that particular point for a moment, as I mentioned earlier in my testimony, a considerable amount of information is exchanged between the company and the division as part of the EBA audit process. I mentioned over 2,400 documents were provided by the company in this case. The company desires and has worked diligently to provide the requested information to the division and to be responsive to initial and follow-up data requests from the division. The company acknowledges that the division has a very challenging task in performing their audit within a certain time period, and that efficient information exchange is critical to their ability to perform that task. The company further acknowledges that there have been many lessons learned through this process and that further improvements can be made. The company appreciates the effort and the patience shown by the division as we have worked to identify gaps in the process and to identify where improvements can be implemented. And the company, I want to dwell on that for a moment, the company is very appreciative of the effort of the division staff in working through the process to make it more efficient for the company, for the division, and ultimately for the benefit of customers. So we're very appreciative of the effort that they put forth. The processes that we've established in the stipulation are a result of that collaborative effort. After considerable experience that we've gained through the prior EBA dockets, the company believes that the lessons learned have now been applied, and the processes that have been agreed to in the stipulation will resolve all known issues regarding discovery. The company is committed to improving the audit process, and we fully expect, and quite frankly demand, from our staff and our company, that subsequent EBA cases will be much more efficient, less contentious. Now turning to the actual non-financial terms. The first non-financial term addresses documentation of trade purpose. And talking a bit about trade purpose, what we mean here is the company only enters into trades for hedging or balancing. What we're talking about when we say trade purpose is the division has requested that the company provide additional information about why a trade was entered into on a particular day at a particular price. Basically what was going through the trader's mind at the time of execution of the trade. So paragraphs 4 and 5 put into place a procedure to capture that information so it can be provided to the division. For all hedge transactions, which are transactions that are prompt month and forward, so this excludes balancing transactions, and a balancing transaction is a daily trade or a trade for a balance of the month product. So we're basically talking about next month and then forward products. The company will put in place a process for capturing the trade purpose through a weekly report that's called the Commercial Objectives Report. Now that report captures the objective that the company has from a hedging standpoint for that particular week. So it will say that we expect natural gas prices to move in a certain direction, for example, and so if we have opportunities to buy or sell based on that thought, the traders are to execute based on that strategy. So it provides a roadmap or a trading guideline for the traders for that particular week. The company is also agreeing to document through additional narratives specific to a particular trade if a trade deviates from that particular strategy. So if the weekly report has a certain strategy and the trader does a trade that is not in line with that strategy, the company has committed to provide additional narrative as to why that trade was entered into. process that we've established through the stipulation will be further discussed and documented in cooperation with the division within 90 days of the stipulation. And this process will change over time as conditions warrant. Parties further agree that this process for trade documentation does not apply to transactions entered into prior to the stipulation. The company is implementing this process now, and so there may be trades in future EBA cases that were done prior to the implementation of this process. For those trades, the parties agree that they'll work in good faith to review the trade purpose, and they'll use relevant documents and information that's been archived by the company, and further discussion with company personnel where applicable. Now, moving on to paragraphs 6, 7, and 8 of the stipulation. These paragraphs are intended to clarify and to document how certain information needed by the division will be obtained by the company and subsequently shared with the division. This includes customer billing information related to curtailment buy-through and the verification of index prices that are used in various calculations. Paragraph 8 establishes that the division may request ad hoc information pertaining to EBA audit-related work outside of a formal docket, and the company will provide the information if available. Paragraph 9 of the stipulation sets forth the process through which the company will provide the division with the base set of trade data to be used in the audit at an earlier time than what has occurred in previous dockets and in a format that is preferred by the division. This will facilitate the division selecting its sample data earlier in the audit process. This will allow the division and the company more time to exchange information on this narrower set of data that is the focus of the detailed audit. Now, the company believes that this procedure in particular will have a significant impact and will greatly improve the audit process as the division gets their information sooner and in a format that's easier for them to use. Paragraph 10 of the stipulation states that the company will provide to the division within 90 days of approval of the stipulation comprehensive list of documents, policies, and reports used or relied on by traders in trading activity. We're exchanging this information in advance of the next EBA audit in order to allow the division and the company to jointly discuss the policy documents and other key reports that the division may find useful once they enter into their audit next year and in coming years. Paragraphs 11, 12, and 13 establish certain procedures that will be put in place to facilitate the timely and accurate exchange of information once the DPU has initiated its audit each year. Paragraph 11 establishes additional communication protocols for identifying and resolving issues with discovery in a timely and efficient manner. Paragraph 12 sets forth that the company will make key personnel available to the division to facilitate and to expedite review of information submitted by the company. And paragraph 13 establishes a procedure through which the division and the company will meet early in the EBA audit process to review in detail the information for the sample trades selected by the division. Two more, and we're done with this section. Paragraph 14 establishes that the company will file a notice of impending EBA application annually on January 15th. The purpose of this is to establish a means by which the parties can exchange confidential information earlier in the process. Paragraph 15 states that the company will record the competitive price for non-broker transactions. This will facilitate the division's review of those particular types of trades. So those are trades that are done directly with a counterparty and not through a broker. And then the last of the process improvement terms is in paragraph 16. And it sets forth that the company will inform the DPU of any updates to relevant policy documents that affect hedging. Some of these documents are the corporate governance and approvals process, the risk management policy, and the front office procedures and practices. And this will facilitate the division's review of the company's trading policy and procedural information throughout the year. And so when the division is performing their audit, they will already have considerable information regarding the company's trading policies and procedures, and they can track that throughout the year. So that concludes my summary of the terms of the stipulation related to the financial and the non-financial pieces. I'll now speak briefly about the rate spread. paragraphs 17, 18, and 19 address how the collection terms and the rate spread. Paragraph 17 states that consistent with the settlement stipulation and docket number 13-035-184, which was the 2014 general rate case, the parties agree that effective November 1st, 2014, all deferral balances currently being collected in the EBA from docket numbers 10-035-124, 12-035-67, and 13-035-32 shall be added together with the $25.3 million balance in this case, subject to commission approval of this stipulation, with the total balance to be collected over 1 year beginning November 1st, 2014. Staying on that particular subject for a minute, previous EBA dockets had collection periods that are a bit staggered. We have three collection periods currently in place right now. What stipulation in the 2014 general rate case said was that we will combine those three collection amounts with this current EBA docket, and we will spread those all across 1 year, beginning November 1st, 2014. That eliminates this staggered ending for all of those collection periods and basically consolidates all of the collections into one annual period. The customers are still paying the same amounts that they were going to pay under the prior dockets. We've just consolidated the payment period. Paragraph 18 provides that consistent with the settlement stipulation in the 2014 general rate case, prior EBA balances shall continue to be collected from customers without interest during this consolidated collection period, but that the $25.3 million balance in this case, subject to commission approval of the stipulation, will accrue interest during the collection period unless otherwise ordered by the commission. If you desire to have additional information on those particular different tranches of collection and Mr. McDougall's testimony on page 3, there's a very helpful graph that shows the timing and the amounts for those various collection periods. Paragraph 19 addresses the rate spread. Parties agree to the spread and the rate design of the approved rate change, including the balances to be consolidated with the $25.3 million balance in this case, and the rate schedules are set forth in Exhibit A of the stipulation. The EBA spread is consistent with the NPC allocator method ordered by the commission in docket number 11-035T10. The rest of the stipulation includes general terms and conditions. So paragraph 21 through 25 contain those items that are found in most stipulations, represent the obligations of the parties to each other and to the stipulation. As with most stipulations, the agreement was reached through negotiation and compromise. Each party became comfortable through their own means, and nothing in the stipulation should be considered as precedential in any future case, with the exception of any issues expressly called out and resolved by the stipulation. With that background, the company recommends that the commission approve the stipulation and all of its terms and conditions.
Do you have any final comments?
Yes, just a final comment. I want to again thank the parties for working together to reach agreement on a very short time frame. It took a lot of work to get to where we are today, and we restate our support for the stipulation. I believe it was negotiated in good faith, and it's in the public interest, and its rates are just and reasonable. And again, I recommend the commission approve the stipulation as filed. Thank you very much.
Anything further, Ms. Hogan?
No, Governor, thank you. I got many rooms.
Ms. Schmidt.
Thank you. Mr. Croft, could you please state your full name and position for the record?
Yes, my name is Matthew Allen Croft. I am a utility technical consultant for the Division of Public Utilities.
Could you briefly describe your participation in this docket on behalf of the division?
I was the division staff's lead witness in this case. I was responsible for coordinating efforts with our consultant, LaCapra Associates, and I was also responsible for coordinating assignments with division staff. I also did a lot of analysis on myself in this case as well.
I see the division has signed the stipulation. Do you have a statement?
I do.
Please proceed.
morning, Commissioners, and thank you for the opportunity to express the Division's full support of the stipulation signed by the parties in this docket. The Division believes the stipulation, including the agreed upon recovery of $25.3 million, is just and reasonable and in the public interest. Mr. Clemens has already adequately discussed the details of the stipulation, and so I would just like to make a few comments regarding the agreed upon number and the difficulties that still remain in the EPA audit process. The Division's testimony in this case raised several issues with regards to plant outages, trade purposes, trade approvals, and other matters. These issues resulted in approximately $7 million in adjustments through rebuttal testimony. Although inexplicably late, certain company revisions and additions were made to previously provided data, as well as other company explanations. Some of these explanations and further audit work performed by the Division took place after rebuttal testimony with limited time for review. The settlement is not an endorsement of such late supplementation of the record on elementary questions concerning EPA expenses. The Division does note that at least 9 phone conferences were held with the company in which certain trading reports were discussed. These phone conferences were very helpful to our staff and to LaCapra Associates. In addition, some data request responses required the company pulling thousands of pages of supporting documentation. The Division appreciates these helpful efforts made by the company. Despite these good efforts, significant problems still remain. We want to make it clear to the Commission that all is not well with the audit process, particularly as it relates to the company's handling of and the sharing of information with the Division and its consultants. First, as has been documented in testimony in this case, many of the late data request responses have been unnecessarily late, not merely delayed by complexity or other unique issues. Second, while many initial company responses to data requests may satisfy a legal requirement to answer a question, they have not satisfied the more important question, does this response adequately explain why certain costs should be recovered? Third, with respect to the current and previous EBA case, the Division and its consultants have become aware of additional types of trading reports and other documents used by traders that should have been disclosed previously. Fourth, at times the company has used the need for customer consent and the proprietary nature of certain information as reasons for withholding key source documents. The Division believes it is the company's statutory obligation to provide such source documents, regardless of its agreements with other third parties or customers. Despite the company's executive management's verbal assurances and the concrete commitments embodied in this stipulation, these difficulties will not be considered to be resolved until the company proves itself in the next EBA filing. Many of the specific terms of the stipulation were written for the purpose of addressing the information issues. Among other things, the company has agreed to arrange access to ICE prices, document certain trade purposes and non-brokered trade prices, and provide a complete list and brief explanation of all the types of reports used by traders in their daily operations. If improvements are not made in the next EBA case, the Division will seek penalties and could recommend the EBA end. Despite these outstanding difficulties, the Division believes the stipulation to be in the public interest. In the Division's view, the Division not only recognizes warranted financial adjustments, but also outlines specific actions to be taken by the company that, if followed, will result in a smoother EBA audit process. These assurances have value so long as they compel the company to act or the Commission to enforce them if violated. The Division is in full support of the company recovering the stipulated $25.3 million EBA deferral balance. The Division supports the rate spread indicated in the stipulation and recommends that these new rates be established November 1st, 2014. That concludes my summary.
Thank you, Mr. Croft. The Division has nothing further.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gimble, would you state your name and position and address, please?
Yes. My name is Daniel E. Gimble. I'm a manager with the Office of Consumer Services. And my address is 160 East 307, Eagle Wellsville.
Did you participate in the discussions about the settlement stipulation that had been filed with the commission in this proceeding?
Yes, I did.
Do you have a statement regarding the stipulation?
I do.
Could you please set that forth now?
The stipulation, good morning. The stipulation includes an adjustment of $3 million to the company's requested $28.3 million EBA increase, which reflects to some measure the three adjustments proposed by the office in this proceeding. In addition, the stipulated $25.3 million amount is appropriately spread to the rate schedules and contract customers using the MPC allocator from docket 11-035-200. The office supports the stipulation as being reasonable and in the public interest. We recommend that it be approved by the commission as filed. And that concludes my statement.
The office has nothing further.
Thank you. Are there questions from the parties or the witnesses who address the settlement stipulation? Thank you. Questions from the commission?
This is a question for Mr. Croft and Mr. Gimble both. I just want to make sure I'm understanding or not reading too much into the phrase at the end of paragraph 18, which says, unless otherwise ordered by the commission. Just to clarify, are the division and the office both recommending that the $25.3 million balance does accrue interest during the period?
That is our understanding, yes, that $25.3 million would accrue interest.
That's the office's understanding as well.
And that's your, that's both parties' recommendation also?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Looking at the accounting that came in quickly and towards the end, like just the past few days, I'm just curious, is there a common understanding as to how the $3 million that's been backed out of the request is going to be allocated among the source energy accounts? Is it the three adjustments the office was recommending? Is there a common understanding of how that was being allocated, or is it just as the stipulation says, it's an unspecified amount?
Yes, that's an unspecified amount. Okay. This is the overall request.
So, will you be filing any post-hearing spreadsheets or anything that might indicate how the allocation of costs will occur going forward so we have a baseline, or should we just use the original filings and keep it in ratio to what the original filing was, the original spreadsheets?
I think I'll defer to Mr. McDougall.
We are not anticipating future filings.
Mr. McDougall, could you get closer to the microphone for the reporter, please? Thank you. That's a good idea. Would you mind if I administer the oath to you, Mr. McDougall? Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. And state your full name for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Stephen R. McDougall, MCDOUGAL.
And an employee of Rocky Mountain Power.
I'm an employee of Rocky Mountain Power at 201 South Main, Salt Lake City, Utah, 8411. We are not anticipating any future filings because what we're really doing is comparing the historical period. So we will make that $3 million adjustment in the accrual account. And that will be really the only place that we will make an adjustment.
And then that will be available to us in future cases though?
Yes.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. Not for Mr. McDougall, so if you
I'll just
sit there if you'd like, or resume your seat wherever you'd like to be. But for Mr. Clements, regarding the provisions on trade purpose, how often is it likely that a trade during the week is going to deviate from the weekly commercial objectives report that expresses the objectives that were at least known at the beginning of the trading period.
In other words,
I'm wondering how much additional documentation is going to flow from this provision.
I think it's very unlikely that that will occur. Typically, the trading strategy is established in that weekly report, and absent a considerable market move or extenuating circumstance, that strategy does not change throughout the week. So I would say that it would be rare, maybe 10 times a year would be an estimate I would provide.
Thank you. Separate subject, regarding paragraph 17, in which you address earlier EBA dockets, I just want to clarify for the record, those earlier dockets, that is the deferral periods pertinent to those earlier dockets, are each scheduled to conclude either by November 1st, 2015 or before November 1st, 2015. Am I correct there?
Yes, each of those three are already scheduled to conclude prior to November 1st, 2015.
So this provision would simply lengthen the recovery period for one or more of them, and again, interest is not accruing on those balances.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Mr. Croft, I have a question about the corrective actions that you address that are detailed in the settlement stipulation. Am I correct in understanding that at least in word, the settlement stipulation adequately addresses the deficiencies in the company's responsiveness that you outlined? Is that an accurate statement?
I think what's presented in the stipulation presents a plan or specific items that will resolve these issues. Obviously, the company would have to perform on those, but assuming they do, then they would be resolved.
Thank you. Anything further? Anything further from the parties?
Yes, Your Honor. Given that no party objects to the stipulation, the company requests that the commission issue a bench order approving the stipulation. Thank you.
Let's be in recess until 10 minutes to the hour to consider that motion.